Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580, our morning talk show. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We are also very pleased to have back here in the studio with us Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month, we start in the spring in March and go through the spring and the summer into the early fall. And this will be our last time this year. Once a month, she's here when things are really growing to talk about stuff that grows in the home landscape and answer questions. If you have a problem and you need some advice dealing with it, that would certainly be welcome. Maybe you are already thinking about next year and what you want to plant next year. We can also take houseplant questions. Any and all of that is certainly welcome, and all you need to do is call us. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line, 800-222-9455. So whichever works best for you, you do that. And I know Sandy will do her best to give an answer. Welcome. Glad to have you here.
Good morning.
Uh-oh. Turn on the microphone.
Good morning.
And we were just talking before we got going. You have been doing this with us now for 10 years.
Yes. I even got a corsage. Of course, the folks out there can't see this, but your lovely folks gave me a corsage for 10 years.
Well, we appreciate all that time. I mean, you figure it's kind of part of your job, and it's not just because you like us that you come over here, but we appreciate it very much.
Well, thanks.
It's always nice to see you in the spring when you're here. It's one of those signs that
says
spring will come. Exactly. Coming back to Capistrano, she comes back here to Focus 580. The lines are full. We have all kinds of people who would like to talk with you, so let's do that. And I guess we'll start right in with our line number one, and the caller is in Urbana. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I live on the windy outskirts of Urbana, and I've got a lot of small shrubs, mostly viburnums, planted, and I am concerned about how to protect them from the drying winds of winter. I had thought to put a chicken wire cage around them and fill it with chopped up leaves, but then I see the mice in there just keeping warm and gnawing. I don't quite know what to do.
Yeah. So these are young shrubs?
I planted a lot of them this spring and summer.
Well, actually, a couple things you can do. The chicken wire thing is not a bad idea, but the key to that, because you're absolutely right, if the mice are out wandering around, they'll just find a wonderful place to hang out for the winter. But the key to that is to wait to do it. If you wait till like the end of December, by then the mice have found wherever they're going to be for the winter, for the most part, and so they're not going to think about your viburnums. And really, if you think about it, for most of the trees and shrubs, they're doing okay now.
Right.
It's really when we start getting into January and February, so it kind of hits at the then. So if you could just wait and do it, then I think
so
that's
a good thing to do. So I'll freeze so the shrubs won't.
Pardon?
I will freeze and the shrubs won't.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. There you go. But you know, you got to sacrifice for your garden. That's part of gardening, is that sacrifice of getting out there and doing
that. Okay, any ideas for keeping them, you know, in their early years through the winter?
Yeah. Because actually what you'll find is, and what I have found, that rabbits are by far your worst problem in the wintertime, to be honest with you, on the deciduous stuff. The rabbits will chew on them all winter long, and so I think that's one of the reasons why you really should put the chicken wire up there, is mainly just to keep the rabbits off.
Yeah.
Most of those viburnums and stuff actually do a pretty good job with the wind. It's really probably the evergreens that are going to have more of a problem with wind. So I don't know if you have any broadleaf evergreens like boxwood or rhododendrons or, you know, any of the evergreens that you might have recently planted. Those might have more of a problem, and with those you actually can buy some stuff called wiltproof.
And is that a reasonable thing? I've got some fairly small azaleas, some evergreen azaleas.
That's actually an excellent product. Okay. It keeps them from losing quite so much moisture when we get a lot of wind. But that is something that's very good on evergreens, broadleaf evergreens.
How soon can that be put on?
Actually, you could put that on now. I might wait a little bit just so you don't have a problem with it sort of wearing off late season.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Very good. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Good luck.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
This is another thing I got to worry about with the rabbits now. We've been talking about my rabbit problems all summer, chewing on my shrubs.
They do. When the shrubs are young, that's what I found. Anything that's young, they seem to really pick on them. So for those first couple of years, if you've just planted some of those first couple of years, get some chicken wire, hardware cloth, and just realize you're probably going to have to cover them up. You're probably going to have to put something around them. But once those shrubs get bigger, then usually you don't have quite so much problem. So it's usually those first couple of years.
So I guess one thing I'm thinking about is I do have a little rhododendron that I put in, and it's only about 2 feet tall this year. And we just put it in this year.
Yeah. Usually the rabbits don't pick on those. Those are actually poisonous. And so they usually don't pick on. Oh, good.
Good. I put up a little sign and said, "Dear rabbits, please eat this.
Okay. Now we know where you're coming from. No, so usually they don't pick on them, but it's probably a pretty good practice on anything young.
All right. On again to the next caller, and that would be someone in Aurora on our toll-free line, line 4. Hello.
Yeah, hi, Sandy.
Good morning.
Good morning. I started a war on weeds in September, and I'm losing.
Uh-oh.
And by far the most vicious is the wild morning glory.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, it is. I don't think I've ever had it as bad as I did this year and still do.
Mm-hmm.
I've gotten it off all the fences, but now it's in my black and red raspberry patch. What do I put down that doesn't kill the raspberries and does the morning glories? Weeds.
Yeah, good question. You know, because this time of year, about the only thing you can do about morning glories is obviously try to get rid of any seed pods that might be out there. But I know they shatter really easily, so sometimes that's difficult. But trying to get rid of those seed pods, because they are annuals, so they have to come back every year from seed. So you can also kind of use that against them. And if you actually mulching sometimes can help. But problem is they often come up right next to the plant, so the mulch doesn't always help all that much. But it will certainly reduce the numbers as to use mulch. And that's probably your best thing in around a lot of your existing plantings, unfortunately.
So I can't put anything down that would kill the morning glory weeds, but not the blackberry, the raspberries?
As far as chemicals?
Yeah.
I'm
as much as I hate using chemicals, this is a honest war.
You're serious, aren't you?
They were up my mulberry, my
I know,
maple tree.
I know. I shouldn't make fun because I know. I've been there. Believe me, I've been there. I think, as far as I know, is chemicals for raspberries and blackberries and stuff. I'm not sure there's anything that's going to take care of the morning glories, to be honest with you. That's also labeled for edible crops like that. We have some, you know, pre-emergence, but they're not always labeled for the edible. So I'm not sure on that one, to be honest with you.
Well, I'll be listening to the program, and if you think of anything, you know, I'll hear.
Yeah.
But I will mulch. I'm thinking this is serious. I'm thinking of going up there and vacuuming out the raspberry patch.
Well, you know, they do come back from seed, so that's the one thing that I guess is good news or bad news. They produce lots of seeds, but they have to come back every year from seed. So if you can, you know, make sure they don't go to flower, that's probably one of the things. But obviously,
but how do you get it? See, I guess I have to do something with the patch itself so I can walk through it and.
Yeah, that's the problem. Yeah, and that's probably part of the problem, is just being able to get to them. But you can check some pre-emergence. I don't know if preen is labeled for raspberries, but that would be one that you might check.
Okay.
I'm just not sure it's labeled for raspberries, but you could certainly check and see if it is.
Okay, thank you much.
Mm-hmm.
All right, thank you for the call. Let's go to Urbana, line 2, for our next caller. Hello.
Hi, Sandy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, my question this morning has to do with bittersweet. Vines and planting them. I have plenty of fence space for them to climb on, but my planting space in the soil is somewhat limited, and I think I have a male and a female plant. What is the closest that I can plant those, together? How close can they be? They're like in something like, I don't know, I guess that's a 1 gallon pot, about 9 inches across, and 8 inches high.
Well, to be honest with you, bittersweet can be holding hands, and it's just fine.
Oh, really?
Yes, they're
so
really
tough.
So you
can put it right next to each other.
Well, it's kind of not. You know, if you got a male and female, you know, they can be close together, near each other.
Okay.
Yeah, actually, it's fine. Bittersweet, will grow like crazy.
Yes, that's what I understand.
Yeah, yeah.
I have seen one of my friend's vines that, you just put in about 3 years ago.
It's obviously the closer you put together, you're going to have this huge mass.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a matter of, you know, sort of dealing with this huge mass.
I mean,
it's not spread out as much, but that's just, you know, just the logistics of that.
Well, I know, and one more question. I know that one is a female, but I'm not sure about the other one. I'm not positive. But I guess I won't know until next fall, will I, whether the pollination has taken place.
Right. I mean, the only way we'd know is that if you had them in flower, when they're in flower, someone could take a look at them and actually could tell you whether they were male and female
Really?
Just by looking at the flowers, right?
Because the flowers are different.
The flowers are different. So if you just took it to somebody that knew, like a master gardener or someone who could take a look at it, it's kind of, they're kind of tiny, but, you know, if you get a magnifying glass, you can figure out whether they're male or female.
Yeah, I've been reading, you know, in a couple of different books about vines to see if there was some clue, and nobody in none of the books I read said that. So that's good to know. Thank you.
All right.
Good
thank
luck.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Let's go to Muhammad. Pardon me there for cutting off last caller. Line three is Muhammad. Hello.
Yes.
Yes, hi.
We have a problem with yucca. How do you kill yucca?
You know,
we have tried digging. We've tried Roundup. And my husband has tried brush Roundup and keeps coming back.
You know, I have heard more about that plant on how to kill it than on how to grow it. I don't know if that tells anybody else out there what's going
it's
on with
it. Sort of a yucky plant.
Yeah, it really can get quite prolific. And I don't know, and when you apply, I guess one thing is when you're applying any herbicides, it has to be in a, you know, fairly warm, moist time of year for it to do well. So if it's like really, really hot, like in July and August, sometimes the herbicides don't work as well. So you might, and maybe you have, maybe that has worked out all right, and you actually have done it when the stuff is actively growing, which seems to be all the time. But and if it's real cold or something, sometimes the herbicide doesn't work very well. So kind of think back, because those should be working for you. Now, sometimes they will resprout, and you have to reapply it, but usually they resprout and they're not as dynamic as they were the first time, so you can tell that you're getting some effect from it, so you may think about that. But beyond that, I think you're on the right track as far as digging it out, using herbicide. I have mentioned to some people even trying black plastic over the top of it just to try to kill them out that way and see if that helps.
It covers a large area.
A big area, so they may know.
Okay.
Well, yeah, boy, good luck.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Perseverance.
For the call.
All right.
Sticking
in. Our guest this morning, Sandy Mason.
What kind of a war on plants this morning?
It's true.
War on Morning Glories.
And I always thought that you were such a gentle and nonviolent person. The callers bring it out of you.
Go for it, yeah.
Well, no, it's me. It's me and my rabbit thing is what it is.
You started it.
I know. Those blasted bunnies. Sandy Mason is our guest. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. We do these shows with her to talk about lawn and garden care, things that grow in the home landscape. We start in the spring and generally go until November, so this will be our last show for this year. And the next year, in March, she will come back and we will do that. And, of course, in the meantime, the Extension folks do have a website that has a lot of good information there. So if you have internet access, you can go look to the website. And of course, all through the year, if you have problems, you can, wherever you live, there's some extension person who is near you, and that's their job to do that kind of stuff, so that you can always call and ask questions.
Right.
And also, we do have this program we call Illinois Gardener as well. That's on WILL television. That's on Thursday. It's Thursday nights, right?
Mm-hmm.
Thursday nights. They keep moving it. Thursday nights, 7 o'clock. It's a live show, and they take calls, and they're on year-round. So there's lots of opportunities to get this kind of information when Sandy is not here on Focus 580.
Okay.
All right. Let's go next to line number 4, and I believe that caller is in the Chicago area. Right here.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
I have two hibiscus, those just gorgeous plants. One has this beautiful orangey flower. And, of course, I've brought them in when it started to get really cold at night, especially about 2 weeks ago. And I think one day when I didn't water it for about several days, some of the leaves started to turn yellow.
Mm-hmm.
I've been more careful since, but it seems to be losing leaves. In other words, leaves are thinning out, although it's still flowering.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if there's anything you can tell me about that. And also, is there anything I can do that will help them survive indoors after being outdoors?
Mm-hmm. Well, they certainly need a lot of, they're a high light plant. So the more light you can give them, the better. So I'm not sure exactly where you have it in your home.
Well, I've got it
home,
in my garden window, so it is getting...
So it's getting... plenty of light. But even at that, what you'll find is, even though, you know, you put them in an area where it's getting quite a bit of light indoors, it's still less light than it was having outdoors. And so it is common for houseplants or plants that we might bring in to lose some of those leaves simply because they're just not getting them as much light. You also probably hit on one of the other problems is that sometimes if you let them dry out too much, and especially if we happen to be heating our homes at the same time, maybe kind of a dry heat, plants tend to dry out a little bit more, and so they can also lose their leaves from that, and hibiscus will certainly do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you're probably on the right track as far as just, you know, making sure it doesn't dry out too much, give it as much light as you possibly can. The one thing about hibiscus is that they tend to be kind of insect magnets.
Yes.
So that would be the other thing I'd be checking on. They do get spider mites, which also cause yellowing leaves. They do get scale that can also cause yellowing leaves. So I'd really be looking it over right now and see if it doesn't have some insect problems, too, along with just some of the other things we talked about.
Yes, I had one that died last year because of that. But in other words, what can I do if I do see anything starting?
As far as insects?
Yeah.
Actually, insecticidal soap, you can purchase that. There's a couple of different products called insecticidal soap. And just spraying them down. And actually, it's probably not a bad idea to do it, you know, when you bring plants indoors, is just to spray them down with insecticidal soap. You want to get underneath the leaves and just really, just to make sure, even though you may not see anything, just to make sure that you're not having problems. And so it's not a bad idea to even do that every once in a while, even when they're indoors.
Just preventatively.
Pardon?
You mean just preventatively.
Right. Now, it's not going to, you know, insecticidal soap is strictly one of those contact-type killers. It's not going to, you know, as soon as the stuff dries, if something walks over the top of it, it's not going to kill it.
Yeah.
So realize it's not preventative in that respect, but it's more the fact that sometimes you just don't see things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes insects are so small or they're such small populations, you don't see them. And so that's probably more in that line than,
I see.
Than prevention.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Thanks very much.
Good luck.
All right.
Bye.
Thank you. Let's go to Urbana for someone else. Line number one. Hello.
Hello. Mm-hmm. Just a testimony to the advisability of using the wire netting around plants. I have a hydrangea nico, which isn't winter hardy. And last year I surrounded it with chicken wire and then covered it with leaf mulch.
Mm-hmm.
And it bloomed 4 or 5 times more heavily than it ever has
been
in the best years. Now I've got a problem, though. It's turning into a tree.
Be careful what you wish for.
Yes. when should I prune it back? I suppose after it bloom sometime in midsummer?
Yeah, those are one of those. And you've really hit on with some of the shrubs, you know, they bloom on old wood, so they have to have those old stems in order to bloom. And some of the hydrangeas are like that. And so you've done an excellent job of protecting those old stems. But you don't want to prune them now, or you're going to be cutting off the flower bud. So it is one of those plants, because it blooms on old wood, you'd want to prune it right after it blooms.
Well, it's going to be a mountain when I finish covering it this year, but it's not impossible. But
yeah.
Another year... It might be.
Might be.
Yeah, so, it really helps.
Yeah, definitely. I'd be thinking about that for this summer, is to prune it back.
May I give my experience with the hibiscus?
Sure.
I bring mine inside, and they go down the basement with the columnias, where they get pretty bright fluorescent light. But I think if you keep the temperature a little lower, and of course with the columnias you can't go very low, they don't dry out as fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
the drying out is really devastating for them. The other thing is I use a systemic for insecticide
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
a couple of weeks before I bring them in and repeat it
mm-hmm.
because they really do.
Yeah.
White flies love them.
Yeah, yeah. I think just about everything loves hibiscus, and that's probably one of the things that kills them off. But you're absolutely right. And actually, that's a good point, that actually just, you know, put them in a cooler area if you can. It will help them in the long run all the way around. If you can put
I think they need less light with a cooler temperature.
Yeah, and you're right. You're right. So it is, that's a good point. So if you can kind of balance those two things.
Well, thanks for the advice.
Mm-hmm.
On that.
Yeah, thanks for your comment.
All right, thank
Bye.
You. On another Urbana caller here, line two. Hello.
Hi, I talked with you last month about my first attempt at a pineapple sage, and it bloomed gloriously until the frost last
mm-hmm.
week, and now it looks kind of miserable. I didn't mm-hmm. manage to get it dug up and brought inside. I'm wondering whether it would worth the mounding leaf mulch over it, whether that might help it survive until next year.
Outside?
Yeah.
Nah. I'm not even gonna be optimistic on that one, to tell you the truth.
Okay.
They're not very cold hardy at all.
Is it worth digging it up now?
I would. Well, I would go out. I mean, I have had things that sometimes they got a little bit colder than I had hoped. And actually, if you go out and check the stems and just feel at this point, we've had enough cold spells that you'd find out really quick. Check the stems. If you can kind of scratch the stem a little bit, even though all the leaves have fallen off, you scratch the stem a little bit, it still appears to be green. Then it might be worth going ahead and bringing it in. It's certainly better than, you have much better odds than leaving it outdoors. But if you go out there and it just, you know, cracks and it's really dry and brown, then it's a goner.
Yeah, okay. And I was wondering whether the woman in Aurora with her wild morning glories might actually be referring to prairie bindweed, which looks like a morning glory, but isn't, my experience is not, that's not an annual. And it is really difficult to get rid of.
Well, it's certainly always a possibility is that it might be bindweed. Morning glories also can be pretty tough because they produce lots and lots and lots of seedlings. But you're right. So, and I guess on any of these problems is to get an accurate identification of what the problem is. Bindweed has a much smaller flower and the leaves are smaller. It's sort of like a miniature version, I guess, of a lot of them. But it is a perennial. And it's much more difficult to get rid of because then you're dealing with seeds as well as the roots and the fact that it's a perennial. So you're right. It is much harder. And certainly on a perennial, then the pre-emergence, the stuff that keeps the seedlings from coming up, is not going to do much. You know, it's going to take care of seedlings, but it's not going to do anything to a perennial plant. So you're right, getting good identification.
What do you call the humongous vine that produces pods with milkweed-type seeds?
Honeyvine milkweed?
Honeyvine milkweed.
Mm-hmm.
That also, I'm convinced that there's only one in all of Champaign-Urbana. All of them are connected.
Did it start at your house? Are you the epicenter of the honeyvine milkweed?
And I don't know if I'm the epicenter, but I've been fighting it for at least 6 or 7 years. And I can sometimes kind of teach it some lessons by putting cans over it. I nip it back and till about an inch or two long, and I stick a big coffee can over it. Because I've tried digging it up, and the roots go to China, or at least someplace else in Champaign-Urbana, and I can never get all of the root up.
And
the roots are pretty identifiable. And then you know, the other plants get growing, and when I'm not looking, the vine comes back.
Yeah. It is a tough one.
Before I know it, there it is, and it's taking over the yard. And it's in a variety of places.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping that one of these years I will starve out the roots, because it continues to try to grow underneath the can. And
oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. One of these days I may be organized enough to try putting herbicide on a glove and wiping on the plant leaves. But I've managed to reduce the population, but I haven't gotten rid of the dang.
Yeah. It's tough. And it's like as soon as you turn your back, just for a moment, it's it takes off. As soon as you go on vacation, that's when they know.
Yeah, so if anybody else has any other ideas, but I've tried the things that make sense, and I haven't come up with anything. So if anybody has any ideas for dealing with that, let me know.
Well, good luck.
All right, thanks for the call. We're about midway through here already with Sandy Mason. We're taking your questions on lawn and garden care. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's with us monthly, always on a Tuesday. We start in the spring, and this will be our last show for this year. So if you have questions, you can give us a call, 333-9455. Also, we have a toll-free line, 800-222-9455. We have another Urbana person here, line 3. Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I think I'm looking for reassurance. I finally got ambitious enough yesterday, went outside, cut back the rose bushes, the raspberry bushes, and dug up iris bulbs, separated them, and then promptly planted them again. Have I goofed?
Well, the fact that you've already done all this, I'm not sure I want to say. One thing. You know, it's you're probably going to be just fine.
Okay.
But I will tell you that you know, we deal a lot of times in gardening with ideal situations or things that we think we try to take the cautious approach, I guess, for a lot of things. So usually for things like roses and stuff, normally we would tell you to wait till spring to do a lot of heavy pruning.
Mm.
And it's mainly because it pretty much all the time. You'll see on roses, you'll see some dieback on them, usually depending on what the winter is. So generally, we recommend, you know, wait till spring, see what dies back, that kind of thing. Now, if it's a shrub that's been there or a rose that's been there for a long time, it's healthy and, you know, not a big, you're probably not going to have any problems with cutting it back now. But it's one of those things. Again, we sort of deal with these, okay, let's be cautious about it. So
well, these had gotten completely out of hand,
yeah.
And I thought, you've got to do something. So I cut them back to about a foot and a half.
They'll probably be fine.
Should I put leaves or something around them or over them? Or
generally, if this is one that's been there for a long time and you've never covered it, then I'm not sure I'd worry about it too much.
Okay.
Normally with roses, especially if they're grafted roses, we would say to cover them usually with soil, like 6 to 8 inches of really well-drained soil. Normally we'd wait until the ground is really frozen. I probably wouldn't do it till at least the end of November and probably more into December. You know, you really wait till they go cold, and then you actually sort of mound the soil, and then once that freezes, you might go ahead and put some wood chips or shredded leaves, something like that, over it. And then you let all these stems just sort of stick out,
yeah.
And then wait till spring and then make some determinations on what you're going to have to prune out. So most of the time we do heavy pruning in the spring. And actually, there's probably a pretty good rule of thumb for a lot of the woody plants that we have. You really, if you think about it, it's, you know, pruning is a, you know, pretty tough thing on a plant in a lot of respects, because you're taking away the food reserves and from them. So you really want to do that when you know the plant is going to quickly recover, or have a time when it's quickly recovered. That's why we usually do a lot of these in springtime. We know they're going to, you know, have a quick recovery period. The longer they sit there and the more cold they go through, more stress they go through, then there's more risk.
Oh, well, I thought so. If I waited until spring, I wouldn't have any roses. Which is why I thought, go ahead and do it now. And
oh, you're thinking because of, yeah.
Yeah, because it wouldn't bloom. If I waited until spring and cut everything off, then there wouldn't be anything to bloom. But we'll see what happens.
Right. A lot of the roses that we have out there bloom on new wood,
okay.
You know, the stuff that's produced. And so that's why we can get away with pruning them in spring. If you have one that blooms, you know, really the early season, only blooms once, it may be blooming on old wood, which you wouldn't want to prune back in the fall. Or early spring. So you'll
done,
find out.
I'll just have to wait and see
right.
what happens.
You'll see. You'll
and
see.
The iris bulbs should be okay.
Yeah, I think now you're talking about the bearded irises,
right.
The big bearded
yeah.
irises.
Uh-huh.
And they'll probably be fine. It's another one of those we deal with the cautious, and probably to be cautious, usually we'd probably say July and August to really cut those back, because they have a tendency to rot. And unfortunately in the fall we get those cool, wet, you know, periods, and then sometimes those rhizomes can just sit there and rot.
Well,
so,
they looked okay, and I thought, well, if you get them right back in the ground,
yeah.
They, you know, they'd have been there anyway.
Right, and if they don't have a lot of cut surfaces, it's that cut
no,
surface.
No, I tried to be as careful as I
yeah.
could, but
yeah.
my God,
then they'll
the
probably be fine.
Were just huge. I
right.
had no idea there were that many out there.
Yeah, right.
Well, then maybe I haven't done too bad a job.
No, I think
so
you'll
we'll
be
wait
fine.
And see what
we'll
happens.
Be optimistic.
Thank you.
Right, good
thank
luck.
Thank you. Let's go to line four. We have someone here on a cell phone. Hello.
Yes.
Hi.
How are you?
Good.
Good morning.
I was calling because a lady I met earlier this summer had a plant called a Texas quint, and it had these funny looking little yellow fruits on them. She gave me a couple of the fruits, and I took them and got the seeds out. And I wonder, can that be grown? Can Texas quints be grown from seeds as they can? When should they be planted? And just whatever you can tell me about Texas quints.
Wow. You know, that's one of those. I'm not familiar with the Texas quince. We certainly have quinces that we grow around here. Usually they're of Asian descent. Usually we have, like, you know, the Chinese, Japanese, you know, that kind of ones. So I'm not real familiar with Texas quince. I'd be a little bit concerned that it might not be hardy. So that would be the one thing to find out if it's going to be hardy.
Apparently
here.
It is. It is quite hardy because she has tried to... get rid of it, and it's
oh, this is in
right.
Okay. I was thinking it was in Texas that you got this for some reason.
No,
okay.
It was here in.
Oh, okay. Well, then it's definitely hardy.
Oh, yeah.
Right. I would go ahead. You certainly could try it from seed. I don't think you'd have any problem with that, to tell you the truth. They're, you know, they're in the rose family with apples and stuff. So generally, most of those things come back from seed real easy. Now, whether it's going to be, you know, the exact same color, you know, that's the whole thing with seeds. You're never quite sure what you're going to get usually.
Okay.
But it sounds like you'd be fine. I would probably go ahead and plant it. Most of those are going to need a cold period in order to germinate. So.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you very
Good
much.
Good luck. Mm-hmm.
All right, thank you. Back here to Urbana, line one, for our next caller. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
We are basil freaks, and we've
all
already
right.
made our pesto before all the basil bit the dust. And we also took some cuttings of the basil to bring inside.
Mm-hmm.
And in the past, I've had fairly good luck with putting the basil, some basil starts in water, and then it lasts for several weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And one year I tried potting it up into some potting soil, and that promptly died.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the basil starts that I put in the water continued for a little while longer, but I couldn't get them to continue through the winter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you have any suggestions?
Did they ever form roots for you?
Yeah, they did form roots.
Okay.
But once I tried to pot them up after they had the roots, then they didn't seem to take. And my sample that I just kept in the water lasted longer than what I potted.
Okay. But anyway, once they were in the water, they produced roots, and then you planted them?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I planted them after they developed roots.
Oh, okay. Okay, okay.
But those died, and what I had still left in the water, because I was kind of doing a little test sample, the ones that I had in the water continued mm-hmm. producing for a few more weeks. You know, they weren't prolific or anything, but at least had a little bit more basil mm-hmm. and kind of extended mm-hmm. the season. And is there some suggestion in terms of how I can extend the season even farther or maybe even keep them alive through the whole mm-hmm. winter mm-hmm. in the house?
Mm-hmm. And so you feel like you've probably taken care of a way of to make sure they have plenty of light and didn't have any insect problems.
They're in a great big, you know, window that faces south, gets really good light.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they're not getting too cold?
What define cold?
Boy, basil doesn't like cold temperatures at all. I 65 would be the absolute.
Oh, really? Yeah, because we probably put our house a little bit lower than that at night.
Yeah, see, they're a heat lover.
Okay.
Basil's pretty much a heat lover, so I wonder if they're not suffering just a little bit because it's too cool.
Okay.
So if there's a way, maybe you can take care of that. Were they producing roots for you? So you feel like the rooting was okay?
In the
as long as you did it in water.
The parts that I put in the water produced roots, and then I left some in the water as a test case. And then I tried planting some in potting soil.
Okay.
What I put in the potting soil didn't last as long mm-hmm. as the ones that I kept in the water.
Mm-hmm. Now, what kind of potting soil did you use? Do you remember?
Oh, it was just some that I had hanging around.
Just hanging around. Just happened to be walking by and you used it. I know.
Years ago.
Yeah, okay. That may be our problem there. I would think about using something like a soilless mix, something along those lines, to be honest with you. Because they like moisture, but they like to be well-drained.
Okay.
And if it's really kind of a mucky soil, it tends to get too wet, something like that, I would really wonder about that a little bit. So I'd look at one of the soilless mixes. There's a bunch of them out there, Sunshine Mix, and there's a whole bunch of different ones out there. But I'd think about using those.
Soilless mix, as much sun as you can get, which I think I have taken care of, and warmer at night.
Warmer at night, and watch out for insects, because there are another one that spider mites and some of those really like. But I think those would be the things. And then I would fertilize it, too, because you're using a soilless mix. I would certainly think about using it on a regular basis to fertilize.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Good luck.
I also wanted to mention that the Nikko Blue Hydrangea, the suggestion for, you know, protecting in the winter,
mm-hmm.
we put a wire cage with some burlap wrapped around it and pine needles, and they really do well from year to year.
Oh, that's good. That's a good.
We're at the edge of their hardiness zone.
Yeah, they're tough sometimes to get through the winter, but yeah, that's another good one. To use burlap is really another good wind protection, too, so that's good. Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Good luck.
That's actually this thing about the basil is actually something I wondered myself, because this summer I had the experience mm-hmm. of, you know, going to the farmer's market, buying basil, having more than you could use, so you put it in some water to try to keep it. And
mm-hmm.
and then I noticed one day that it was sprouting, it was growing roots. And I thought, well, could you take that and put in a pot and see if you could get that to go? So the answer is, yeah, you could, as long as you made sure that it got lots of light and I wouldn't try to make it go through the winter time. I think that's, you know, but I thought about, you know, trying to do something.
And if you do have plenty of light, it is one of those that, you know, they're an annual plant, so they do kind of reach their maximum when they don't quite do as well. They start to flower or whatever. So it is one of those that you could actually, you know, reseed it. You know, they actually do very mm-hmm. well from seed, come up real well from seed. So, but I think for a lot of us, our homes are a little bit too cool, probably, for a lot of basil.
Okay. All right. Let's go next to Olney, line number two. Hello.
Good morning. How
yes.
are you?
Good.
Good morning.
Good. I was listening a while ago when someone was having trouble getting rid of yucca. And what I do with yucca and with cattails in the edge of my pond, whatever weed killer I'm using, Roundup or whatever, I mix the highest level. I also add a tablespoon of dishwashing detergent for a wetting agent
mm-hmm.
to make it
mm-hmm.
hold.
Mm-hmm.
That helps. One other thing that I do then is I use either a strong solution or a straight solution, because both the cattails and the yucca have like a little cup in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to get down to those rhizomes or roots,
mm-hmm.
and I pour about a tablespoon of that in there. That pretty well does it, and I'll have very few come back up, and I'll do one more dose, and I'll be done.
So that reapplying it, I think, is one of the things that's often for those.
Yeah.
But I should tell, you know, and I'm sure you're doing this, is that you do want to use it at the highest label rate.
Oh, yes, definitely.
So just because, you know, you don't want to overdo it just because it's, you know, you think it's going to do better. So
No. But
if it says 2 tablespoons at the highest rate, then that's what you use. Okay,
yeah.
As long as people realize that.
But
you're right.
The wetting agent helps.
The wetting, right. And that is something that, you know, using that little bit, it helps to spread out the spray.
Yes.
So you get better contact with it.
Exactly.
So, yeah, that's a good thing, too.
Because the leaves on both of them are hard to hold.
You're right. They're kind of slick.
Yep.
They're kind of waxy. So that's a good suggestion.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks.
You.
All right, thank you. Let's go to Bloomington Normal, line 4. Hello.
Hi there.
Mm-hmm.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good.
Good morning.
Great. My question is this. A friend gave me some gorgeous yellow bearded iris, and I picked it up like 3 weeks ago. She just dug out a big clump. And is it too late to divide those and plant them now? Or, you know, am I out of luck?
Well, I think if you can find a well-drained spot, which is where irises would want anyway, that I would go ahead and plant them. I think you're better off just to plant them and get it done. As we were mentioning before with one of the other callers, is the problem is that sometimes planting them this time of year is if they have that cut surface, if you have to cut them a lot, then sometimes they get a rot there. So that's our only concern. So I probably wouldn't do a whole lot of dividing on them. I'd probably try to keep them as whole as you can.
Okay, but you can't hold them over and do them in the spring.
You could. I mean, if you had no other choice, you certainly could put them in a cool spot. I'd put them in as cool as you could, not necessarily freezing, but as cool as you could, like an unheated garage or something maybe that isn't going to freeze. You probably certainly could do that. In the long run, I think you're better off to get them outside in the ground.
Do you? Okay. Well, that was my question.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. On again to Urbana, line 1. Hello.
Oh,
yeah.
My wife brought some hanging plants, some fern-like things, and the problem that I think that we're kind of looking at is that bringing them inside, you know, it looks like the doggone plant's taking over the doggone basket, and I'm kind of wondering, you know, what we're kind of faced with here. I think we'll probably end up having to take them outside to water them, because... But they're almost outgrowing the basket as it is.
Right.
Do you have any suggestions on what we might kind of consider here?
Yeah, are they getting plenty? Is this a really high light area for the most part? Are they getting plenty of light? I mean,
I think that they're by a south window, so they're getting light.
Because we probably wouldn't divide them this time of year, but you may find that that's really going to be helpful because you're absolutely right. What you're going to find out is you can't water the thing, and so it dries out all the time, and it's always dropping leaves, so it ends up being this pain all winter long. So you might think about go ahead and divide them, and you're probably going to have to get out a saw or something because on some of those ferns, they really are tough to divide. But in the long run, it might be easier for you, and sometimes you can just divide them into quarters, and in the long run, it helps. If you're not going to do that, then I would really think about putting it in a bigger pot, which probably isn't the route you necessarily want to go, but it'd make watering much easier.
Okay.
So one way or the other.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Mm-hmm. Good luck.
All right. We have about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus. If you have a question for Sandy Mason, she's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. This is for the last time this year we're doing our lawn and garden care show. We'll take a couple of months off, and then she'll be back here in March. We'll do it again. And in the meantime here, if you got questions, you can call us 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. We have an off-air question here from somebody who was interested in trying to grow parsley inside during the winter.
Mm-hmm.
Can you do that?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Okay, there you go.
The answer to that question. Now, actually, it's another one of those with any of these, you know, when we try to grow things indoors, is light. It's always going to be the limiting factor because we just, you know, the day length, the daylight is less, and, you know, a lot of times we just don't have enough light. So, or we get days like today. So, if you're going to do it, I would probably recommend that either you have a garden-type window where you're getting light from more than one side, or if you can get fluorescent lights. And in the long run, that's probably going to be your best bet. And parsley actually likes it fairly cool. You could even do it in your basement if you had fluorescent lights. Mm. So just think about, you know, how much light you're really getting, and maybe thinking about getting some fluorescent lights or using extra light somewhere along the line.
Okay. I know I have tried to grow herbs inside, and it can be tough, particularly with some of the woody ones, because they really, it's in the wintertime in most people's houses, it's too dry them. And not only do they need to be watered in their roots, but I think if the air is too dry, mm-hmm. it's just not going to do it. Mm-hmm. So either you have to do something about the humidity, misting them, I guess, can help. That's what some people, you know, you just get a spray bottle and, you know, do that. But they seemed not to, you know, 1 year I had a couple of really spectacular plants that I had actually brought from outside, a big thyme and a big rosemary. Mm-hmm. And they did really well for a while. And mm-hmm. it just seemed like overnight, one night, they just died.
Yeah. And you're absolutely right. You know, especially with rosemary, you'll see that. If it's just, and rosemary's definitely, we talked about that with hibiscus, rosemary's definitely, put it in a cool spot. Put it in the mm-hmm. coolest spot you can possibly put it in, and it really does much better. If you can do that, don't let it dry out. It's another one. It's not very forgiving. If it really gets dry, if the air's too dry, it's not very forgiving plant. It'll tell you right away that it's not happy.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to keep rosemary happy.
Absolutely. Keep Rosemary happy, and she will keep you happy.
That's right.
Let's talk with the caller in St. Joe on line one. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I was just calling about a hibiscus that I got at the farmer's market, and I babied it all summer, and it's gorgeous, and I just hate to see it die, and I'm not sure what to do with it.
Mm-hmm. And you brought it indoors? And
I've been bringing it indoors, but... you know, does it need to freeze? Will it come back next?
No. If it's the tropical hibiscus, there are hibiscus that we have out in our flower garden, but it's the tropical one that has a slick, shiny leaf, big flower, then that's the tropical one, and it's not going to make it outside.
Okay.
And so you're going to have to bring it in, and it should already be in now.
Mm-hmm.
And high light, it's one of those that likes a lot of light. Don't let it dry out too much. We were talking a little bit earlier, if you can put it in maybe in a little bit cooler spot. So if you can kind of manipulate all those things and watch for insects, because they do like, a lot of the insects will like them. So kind of look at all those things, and then you should be able to get it through the winter. But sometimes they're a little bit more challenging because of the insect problems.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's a huge plant too.
Yeah, that's the other problem. And it's another one of those that generally we wouldn't want to do a lot of heavy pruning now. We'd probably want to do that in the spring. So you kind of have to decide on... if you've got a lot of light, I would think about maybe doing a little bit pruning on them. But
are there some varieties that do make it through the winter? I thought this was one of them, but...
Oh, sure. You can get them through the winter.
Uh-huh.
You certainly can, and people certainly do that. It can be somewhat of a challenge
uh-huh.
by finding that. I think it's one of those things, when you find that perfect spot where it seems to be getting plenty of light, and, I mean, it'll tell you, and mm-hmm. you don't let it dry out too much, those kind of things,
yeah.
and then you certainly can do it year after year.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
Good luck.
All right. To line two and Champagne. Hello.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
Sandy, I had read an article in the paper about 3 weeks ago where I think you discussed the butterfly bush and,
mm-hmm.
and how to trim it and this and that. I clipped the article, but I think I accidentally threw it away and I didn't get a chance to read it.
Mm-hmm. Well, as far as butterfly bushes go, it's another one of those that we probably wait till spring. I know some people say to go ahead and prune them back now, but my feeling is just wait till spring and see, once it starts to bud out a little bit, then you really do want to trim them back. If you don't trim them back, then they tend to get this big gangly looking thing. And probably most of the time you're going to be trimming them back to 8 to 10 inches. So in the springtime, when they start to show little buds, then I'd prune it back.
Okay, so... trim back all of the branches
mm-hmm.
8 to 10 inches.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. They'll look a lot better.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's go to Urbana Line 3. Hello.
Hello, Sandy.
Mm-hmm.
I called mm-hmm. earlier about the bittersweet. I have
mm-hmm.
another question. On the south side of our property, we've had I've always called it a Korean viburnum. It's kind of a miniature.
Mm-hmm.
Viburnum goes to about 4 feet or so.
Mm-hmm.
It's been there for about 35 years, and every spring it blooms about in April with these very fragrant flowers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's dying of old age, you know, one by one. The plant, at least we think that's what it
mm-hmm.
is.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're about to take it out and replace it, and I would like another, you know, blooming plant there, another blooming shrub, and I'm wondering if maybe just replacing the viburnum with another viburnum is the best way to go, or whether there's something else we could put in there that would be nice for a change. Mm-hmm. It doesn't necessarily have to be fragrant, I guess, but it is gets a lot of wind from the south.
So this is full sun? I'm not sure I gathered
Pretty much full sun, yes.
Well, certainly, I guess it depends on if it's is truly that old, then I suppose it could be dying back from old age. But I would really, once you dig it up, I think I'd see what's going on and see if it's not getting a root rot problem, which sometimes some of the viburnums can get, in which case then you really need to think about, you know, if there's something that's changed in the area and maybe make it more wet or something like that.
I don't think anything has changed. It's at the top of a little tiny slope, so it's very well drained. It's on the dry side there. Some of the summer, but you know, okay, we will take a look at that.
Yeah, but certainly the viburnums are fine in that kind of an area.
Yeah.
Actually, full sun, and take advantage of the many different ones that are out there that have nice flowering and stuff. I think you can hardly. I've never met a viburnum I didn't like.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah, some of them get really tall, so you'd really have to look at which ones you're getting.
No, I don't want anything, you know, more than like 4 or 5 feet at the top. So are any of the lilacs a possibility, or do they get too wide?
Well, actually, some of the smaller lilacs, there's Miss Kim happens to be one of them. I think Tinkerbell, there's a bunch of smaller ones that actually do very well.
I have a Miss Kim, and I have to keep pruning it, you know, cutting it back a bit on the sides. It could get to be very wide.
Yeah, they're almost as wide as they are tall.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's another one called Palaban.
What is it called?
Palaban.
I think it's
P as in Paul, A-L-I-B-I-N, I think, or something to that effect.
What's the first letter?
P as in Paul.
Oh, P. Paul, P. O.
I think it's P-A.
P-A.
L-I-B as in boy, I-N.
P-A-L-I-D.
Or it's probably close enough that you can figure out.
Close.
But it tends to have a little smaller leaf than the Miss Kim. And from what I've seen, it tends to be not quite so wide and not quite so big overall.
And it also, I've read about lilac, it's Syringa microphylla, and it blooms later, like in June or July.
Right, but this is what this category is, like palabins and stuff. They tend to bloom later than the big lilacs. Flowers aren't quite as big, but they're so nice and fragrant.
And they get, you know, the paladin or that sort of thing would stay kind of within those bounds, you think?
I think so. From what you're, if you could deal with the Korean spice viburnum, then yeah, you can probably deal with these fine.
Yeah, this has been beautiful for so many years.
Mm-hmm.
And one by one, year by year, almost like the last 3 years, it loses one branch and then another branch.
Yeah, I don't almost wonder if it had a root rot problem or something else going on. But
how could root rot happen if it's, you know, well drained and, or, you know, could it, is that like a bacteria or a...
Well, it's a fungus for the most part. And it's one of those things that sometimes just through stress, any number of things, if they've gotten too dry or something along the line, sometimes it makes them more susceptible to some of the other problems.
What would you see if you see root rot?
Well, when you dig it up, you'd see that the roots should be nice and white and look good and all that kind of stuff. And if they're not, they're brown. And, I mean, you definitely tell. Or if the stem is rotten. Sometimes they get some stem rot problems, too.
Okay.
And viburnums.
Okay, a lilac would be a possibility.
Sure.
I know it wouldn't be fragrant, but what about a flowering quince?
Certainly, those are another ones that sometimes the quince get very wide.
Do they?
Right.
Okay, so that's really not so
pretty. Yeah, I'm not sure you'd be if you're not wanting to get wide, you may not be happy with those.
I don't want it.
Yeah, they get pretty wide.
Because we have a small lot, and the Korean viburnum just fit beautifully where it was. Okay.
Well, good luck.
Thank you.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there with the promise that next year, in March, Sandy will be back. 2004, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, you can look for her and other folks here in our community on the show Illinois Gardener on WILL TV Thursday nights at 7. And there is a possibility on that show to call in and ask questions. And anytime, you can call your local extension person and talk with them if you have garden questions or other sorts of things. And check out their website, too. Which is www.urbanext.uiuc.edu. Yeah, or just put into your browser. I think if you put into your browser, University of Illinois Extension, it'll find it.
Pop.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you.